What is going on, guys? This is Rachel, your host, and I'm here with a special guest today. His name is Erica Costa, and he is my brother.
I am her brother. It's good to be on the show for the record. Super excited. Thank you, Rachel, for taking me into consideration. Very humbled, very honored.
You're welcome. Thanks for being here. So today we're going to talk about where you've been for the past 2 years. And let's just start off by telling us, where have you been?
I've been in a really small place called Guatemala, Coban. I was able to serve over there as an LDS missionary, and that's where I've been for the past 2 years.
Okay, so you served on your mission, and what was the hardest part or experience that you had to go through on your mission, just out of the gates, the bad luck?
That's a good question. The worst experience, you said?
Yeah, the hardest.
The hardest experience. The hardest experience at the beginning, at the very, very beginning, was not being with my family. Being a family guy, I think that was the hardest part for me. Towards the end, it's kind of funny how it works. At the beginning, a missionary, kind of the hardest thing for them to leave is home. But at the end, the hardest thing to leave is the mission. So I think after a couple months, I kind of understood the importance of serving others. So the hardest thing for me was actually leaving the people that I learned to love over there and just seeing their progress and their smiles.
That's really cool. That's awesome.
Thank you.
So on the other side of the spectrum, what were your happiest moments, or why did you love serving over there?
The happiest moments, I would say, was when I would completely forget about myself. I feel like a lot of people in today's world are kind of blinded and kind of selfish in a way where sometimes we forget to be humble and just kind of forget about ourselves and just kind of get out of that bubble and just put others before us. And so I think that would be considered the most happiest moments of my life or of my mission, when I would honestly just put them before me and just see Christ kind of work through them, through me, and just seeing the results in their lives, the difference.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people say that service is the key to happiness, you know, and I think that you really felt that on your mission.
Yeah, exactly. Denzel Washington says it best when he says that there's nothing more selfish than being in the service of others. And at first, that's a little confusing, right? But if we come to understand it, what we gain out of serving others, sometimes it's so much more what we get than what they get out of us being that instrument in the Lord's hands. So it's really, really awesome, and it's really eye-opening, and it humbles the heart, and it kind of helps us mold us to who we're supposed to be.
That's awesome. So I want to get into expectation versus reality, because before the mission, everyone's like, it's going to be the hardest time of your life, but it's going to be the best 2 years of your life. You know, the mission's like this, MTC's like that. Like, what, you know, expectations did you have going into the mission? And then what did you realize were like, no, you were completely wrong, or you were completely right?
The mission, when someone gets their calling, they kind of portray the mission as just kind of a perfect bubble, somewhere where everything's going to go exactly as planned and exactly how one kind of visualizes it. But as you come to realize when you're out on the field, more than anything other than being at the MDC, more on the field, you come to learn that it really isn't a perfect experience as it should be. When Christ was here on earth, he didn't deal with perfect people. So what he did was super hard, and so that's kind of what missionaries end up doing. They kind of end up doing what the Lord came here to do. And it was just kind of confusing at the beginning to see that not all the missionaries were obedient, or not all the missionaries were like super in their spiritual spot. But what I came to understand was that even as missionaries, we were still kind of young adults. We were at the ages of 18, 19, 20, and those are still just ages where one is maturing. So the mission is a really good place to kind of become who you're supposed to be, but that does kind of confuse a missionary if he doesn't go in with a full heart, mind, and strength, and willing to serve, that it's not what it seems, as in perfection and as in all that work and stuff.
Yeah, Yeah, I can definitely see how, like, you go into the mission and you expect, how you said, everyone to be just at a spiritual level that it's like, oh my gosh, like, how do you even get there? But in reality, a lot of people still have their flaws going into the mission. And, you know, some that can, like, diminish the spirit of someone else and be like, oh, I thought it was different. But I think it's, like, a learning experience to see how, like, even, like, we're all human and, like, even if you go and try to serve someone, you try to serve someone with, you know, a humble heart, but you still have flaws. We're still humans. So exactly. I think that's really cool.
Exactly.
So to continue on, let's talk about your comps. Uh-huh. Favorite comps, horrible comps, frustrating comps. You know, just like those where you're like, oh my gosh, why did God give me this comp? Or
why did you do this?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Companions. Companions were interesting. I had about 9 of them, 9.5. One was Guatemalan and super short, so I count them as a half.
Oh, jeez.
But no, I had about 9 companions. Each and every one of them, they were sent to teach me something. And every missionary goes through this where they get along with one or two or three or a couple of their comps and they don't get along with others. But I did learn that my best comps weren't the ones I ended up really getting along with at the beginning nor at the end. It was the ones that I actually struggled with, the ones that I actually had to be patient or to be more humble or to end up being more like Christ. So at the end of my mission, I could kind of look back and see and say that my worst comps were my best, due to the positions and the situations that we were put in. Personally, I was pushed to my limit in a couple of situations or times on my mission where I really had to depend on the Lord to really show me how far I could get or what kind of a disciple I could be for him or what kind of an instrument I could be for him. So I feel like God really acts when a missionary or a human or a person is at its limits. They're at their limits. And I think Elder Holland quoted that once. I'm not sure. But I could say that my worst comps were my best.
That's cool. Yeah. Because I feel like you can have, like, the greatest comp in the world. You guys get to, like, you guys get each other, and it's just all fun and games, but you don't really, you could learn something, you know, but not as deep as, like, someone who you have to have patience with. You have to learn to love them. You have to learn to be there for them, despite how frustrating it is, you know, and I think at the end of the day, like, it's funner because you notice how more patient you are, or like you just notice little things that make you happier because of that person, or that you've improved because of that person.
Exactly. And I feel like that's kind of what Christ has dealt with when he was here, or what our Heavenly Father does. I mean, he knows that nobody on this earth is perfect. The only one that's ever walked on this earth is Christ, right? And so I think that's kind of awesome where we can kind of see that our Heavenly Father hasn't really ever had anyone to work with that's perfect other than Christ. So that's where a missionary really comes to understand what God wants for him and really humble themselves and be just kind of a moldable person to really become a disciple of Christ, which you're supposed to be when you're a missionary.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So switching topics a little bit, what were the points where you're like, you were on your mission and you're like, this is so worth everything I've gone through? Like, the moments where you're just like, oh, I had the worst week, but this moment made it all better, and despite whatever, I'm happy at this very moment in time. Like, what were those points in the mission?
Those points for me, it's two separate parts. I think if we were talking about a daily vision, like, what would kind of get me up in the morning would be just getting home at the end and just kind of kneeling down and praying and really actually feeling God's love for me and his thanks towards what I had done during the day. But when it really comes down to it, it really is just seeing the conversion in people's lives. When you see a family that's about to be broken, or a family that's struggling with their marriage or their children, or they don't have any money to buy food, or they're about to get kicked out of their house, just the worst situations, the most humbling part was when they could actually really realize that God is in their lives and that he's never left and that he really truly takes care of them. And every little thing is a blessing and every little thing is a miracle. And when these people really accepted the gospel and you could see that love in their eyes and that change, even though the things around them were still hard and were still in many ways the same, that change of heart was what kind of kept me driven. It was what kind of just kept me going. And the mission is a super hard experience physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. But those things and those moments were the ones that would kind of just, I would say, thank you, God, for putting me here. Even if I didn't have food that day or if I didn't have a bed to sleep on, it would just be an awesome experience.
Yeah. And I think it's so awesome how, like, people in other countries are just so happy with what they have, you know, and it's really easy for us to come here and to just be like, I don't have this, I don't have that, I don't have this, you know, and then for them to be like, I don't have food, but I know that God will provide, or like something good's gonna happen. And you know, we have people here in the States that do that, but for the most part, a lot of people outside, you know, outside civilization, because you've gone outside of civilization, and they're just like, you know, we'll do what we have, you know.
Exactly. It's hard. I mean, people over there, they literally live off tortillas and salt, and if they have any money, they'll live off tortillas and chili. I'll say chile. And like, I came home and I would see people, like, I'd go to a restaurant and I'd see people just throwing away food. Or like, I remember the first day I came back, we went to Chuck-O-Rama and I had food on my plate left over, and I just felt awful. Because I know that there's people over there in such humble situations that they honestly don't have anything to eat. Like, if they do have 5 tortillas, they're lucky. And so there's people here that haven't really opened up or seen anything like that. So it kind of opened my eyes into seeing that every little thing that we have here is a huge blessing. And we just got to share it. And we just got to love it. And we got to be appreciative. Yeah. And we have to have that gratitude in our hearts, because there's a lot of people that are so much more happier with a lot less. And that's a huge lesson that we can learn.
Yeah. And then it's like, they have a lot less and they're always willing to give.
Exactly.
Like, how many times did you go to a family who had like no food for their children and then just be like, here's this is what I can offer you, but my kids can't eat, you know. So it's pretty cool to see how people are willing to give, you know, with a humble heart, and to just still be able to be happy with less.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so I went to go serve around people, indigenous people, Mayan people. They were called the Kekchis. And these people, they're really, really, like, you could say, they're not really up to date with everything, as in food-wise or anything. Their style is still, like, soups, like, just chicken, and if they have chicken, or, like, tortillas and stuff. So, I mean, these people, when they would see us coming, and they didn't have much food, they would literally just give us everything and anything they had, knowing that their kids wouldn't eat, or their husband wouldn't eat. They knew that the Lord would bless them, as in, like, accepting us or, like, giving us food and stuff like that, because they knew who we were. They really understood the fact that we were messengers of the gospel and that we were really just there to help them. And so it's something that you don't really see in other places that are more civilized, right? These people have a lot less than we do, or that other people do in other places. But they are willing to give it all because they know the importance of it.
Yeah. Bless them. Bless their souls. Hearts. They're amazing people. Okay, so while you were on the mission, you mentioned two experiences that you had. Both very sad, but humorous at the same time, and I want to talk about them. Uh-huh. So early on in your mission, I think you messaged mom this first. I don't know who you messaged first. But about the scary house, the story that you still haven't told us. I think you're waiting for Halloween, but I think for Halloween. They need to know.
The world needs to know my story.
Should we wait for the Halloween episode?
Yes.
No, it's okay.
I can say it. I don't mind.
All right. Okay. Tell us about your very scary walk up the hill.
Okay, so it was a dark and stormy night. No, I'm just kidding. So
insert rain effect.
No, it was an interesting case. So I was about 2 months into the mission, still in my training, And I was in this one area called Bansos, which is, it was kind of an area full of drunks and not a lot of people that were in their sixth sense. So I was with my companion one night, and we were supposed to go to an appointment, and this guy comes up to us and he's like, "Hey, I know you guys are missionaries, you guys are Mormons, and I know you guys give blessings." And so
blessings on blessings.
So we were like, "Oh, okay, this guy knows about the church." We didn't ask him if he was a member of the church or anything, but we were like, "Okay, could we go the next day?" And he's like, "No, because my daughter's gonna die." And so we were like, "Oh, snap. Okay." And so we asked him how far he lived, and he said, "I live like up this mountain, just 5 minutes away." And we were like, "Okay, that's cool. No beef. We'll go, and then we'll come back." And
did you look at the mountain when you said yes? Did you notice the ginormous walk you had to go through?
It didn't look as big as I thought, or it didn't look, because it was dark. So it was about 6:30. At 6:30, the sun starts to go down in Guatemala, and so it was 6:30, about 4:00. We start walking up this mountain, and we just feel a little weird about this guy, and it starts to rain, which is an inconvenience. You'll understand at the end of the story. But it starts to rain, and we walk, and it passes about 10 minutes. And we ask this guy, like, if we were close. And he said, "Yeah, it's just up this hill." We're like, "Okay." So we keep walking, and it was dumb on our part. Now we understand. We walked up for about 45 minutes, and we walked to the very top of this mountain.
In the dark. And you're still following him.
And it was raining. Oh, geez. And this guy only spoke Kekchi, which was confusing to me at the moment because I was about 2 months in the mission still, and I was still learning. I was brand new. I was a baby. And so we didn't listen to the spirit multiple times. So what happened to us was tragic, but it was a lesson. So we get to this guy's, we get to a light post that was kind of in the middle of nowhere, and this guy just books it into the forest. Like, there was a forest section, and he just books it into the forest without telling us anything. And so at that moment, my comp gets super scared, and he runs the other way, leaving me in the middle, in the dark, raining, and I'm shocked. I'm in shock, and I don't know what's going on.
I didn't hear this part
of
the story.
And so I was very confused, and I was like, "Oh, shoot, what do I do?" And so I told my comp to relax, and, like, I started yelling at, well, not yelling, but I told him, I'm like, "Hey, relax, dude, just wait." And so I ran up to my comp, and I told him, I asked him, "What should we do?" Because, I mean, he was my trainer. And so all we could think about was pray. So we prayed right there in the middle of the walk, of the way, of the path, whatever.
Yeah, the walkway
path. The walkway path, mountain.
Muddy way.
And at the end of the prayer, we didn't feel anything.
Listening to the spirit.
I feel like God was like, "Oh, you don't want to listen now? You're going to learn today."
I'm done with these two.
And so right when we finished, we didn't feel anything. And the guy, and we hear our names, we hear elders. "Elders, come, it's this way." And so our human state just took over, and we're like, "Okay, we're just doing this to help." So our hearts were in the right place, right? But we were just being dumb. And so we go into this mountain and went into this forest, and we walk about 5 minutes, and then we go down a little hill, and we see his house. And about 5 minutes.
Jeez.
And so we walk down into this house, and they have no electricity. They have just candles. And it was kind of like a scene in like a 2018 scary movie, like a witch, Blair Witch Project scene.
Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah, pretty much. And we walk in, and the first scene that we see is there's like a huge, big cross on a table with candles on the sides. And it was kind of freaky because, I mean, this guy was just kind of sitting there staring at us, and he just only spoke Kekchi, so he started speaking Kekchi, and I could kind of understand it. So he was telling us that he was going to go get his daughter and put her on a bench.
Because she was the one that was sick,
because
right?
She was sick, supposedly. Supposedly.
Yeah.
So she was sick. So he goes, and when the family sees him, they all get super scared, and they run out of the house through the back.
Ooh.
So we didn't know what was going on with this family. So he goes to the back and grabs his daughter and starts to drag her. It was like a scary movie scene. It was awful. Drags her, and this girl just starts crying, right?
Oh,
she starts crying, and he just grabs a bench and lays her down and tells her to lay there because we were going to give her a blessing, and then that we were going to pay him.
What?
And so right then and there, we were just like, like, no, we knew something. Well, we knew something was off, but at that moment, we were like,
red flag was it was nighttime and you walked 45 minutes up. That was the first red flag. You should have seen that. Second red flag, red cross. Don't go in there.
And so this guy's like, okay, so you guys are going to put 1,000 kets, which is about $125, but in kets, it's a lot. It's quetzales, which is the currency in Guatemala. He's like, you guys are going to put that amount on the table, and then she's going to get healed after you guys bless her. And so at that moment, he goes at the back of the house. I don't know what to do, but he left. And so me and my comp, we look at each other, and my comp asks me what to do. And so I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, let's just give her the blessing, and let's just go, because this is dangerous. And so my comp's like, okay. So we actually sit her up. The guy comes back, and we sit her up, and we say it's not necessary for her to be laying down. And so he gives her the blessing, because he's the one that gave it to her in Kekchi.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of there, but I didn't feel that I was supposed to close my eyes.
Oof.
I felt that I was supposed to, like, see what was going on in the room to kind of keep the guy in check, just in case of anything, because we felt such a bad, bad, bad spirit
that
we were not supposed to be there. But I mean, either way, we did it with a good heart. That's what counts, okay? We did it with a good heart.
Gosh, if it was dark right now, I'd be like super scared.
So he's giving the blessing. I'm watching this guy just to make sure. He has a machete. Everyone in Guatemala owns a machete. Literally everyone.
Instead of a phone, it's a machete.
Pretty much. So this guy has a machete really close to him. And the first thought of my head was he's going to chop our heads off if we don't pay him. Which almost happened. So my comp finishes the prayer. And we're about to leave. And we're at the doorstep. And my companion's behind me. And these Kekchi guys in front of me. And he starts speaking to me in Kekchi. And he starts asking me where the 1,000 kets are. And I told him, we're missionaries. We don't have any money. I know I look gringo, but I'm Mexican. So
yeah.
My companion was gringo, but Mexican too. So we're like, we don't have any money. We can't do that. And in that moment, right when we told him no, he grabs his machete.
Oh my.
Yells at his family in Kekchi, just the craziest swear words in Kekchi, and grabs the machete. And by this point, I see my companion in my peripherals where he's just gone. He booked it. He's not even near me anymore.
He didn't even, like, tell you anything?
He didn't tell me anything.
Not like a little, like, push?
No,
like a
nothing.
Tap on the shoulder?
No, he's a loser. He leaves me. And think of this. I'm brand new on the mission. It's dark. It's raining. I don't know Kekchi, so what I was doing is I was analyzing the Kekchi, because I knew how to understand it, but I had to cut it down.
Yeah.
So he's yelling in Kekchi, and I'm like, what is this guy saying? Like, what?
Yeah.
And I look back, and my companion's gone, and I'm like, freak, I need to go. Like, I need to leave in this moment. But I kind of froze for a second, but I managed to book it. I ran, and I start running, and this guy's behind me. He's chasing me with this machete.
Goosebumps.
And in that moment, I knew that if he was going to take a swing at me, or like he was going to do something, or he was going to throw the machete at my face. And so I'm running, and luckily it was muddy because it was raining. So luckily, as I look back, this guy is throwing a swing at me. But luckily, I slipped and I fell.
Carter from Rush Hour? I slipped and I fell.
I slipped and I fell. I pulled I don't even know, but I slipped and this guy swung at me. And if I wouldn't have slipped, my head would have been chopped off.
Oh,
like,
no.
Literally. Literally. So I slip, and he slips, and my companion isn't even in my vision. I don't even know where he is. I thought he had left the way we came down from, but he took another route. So the only thing I could think of is it's too slippery to go up, so I'm going to go down.
Slide down.
So I'm going to slide down. And so what I do is I just jump. I literally dive, what is it?
Like head first?
Head first. Not knowing what it was, if it was a bush, if it was a mountain, if it was anything. And it was literally a downhill mountain. Like, I jumped off of the mountain.
Shoot.
And so I'm rolling down this mountain. I'm rolling. And luckily, my companion rolled down the same mountain. But he was, like, already hanging by a tree. Yeah, he was hanging by a tree. And I was hurt. I felt a pain on my hip. And, well, not my hip, my, what is this called?
Your thigh?
My thigh.
Your under thigh?
And I felt it, and there was like a huge little spine, or whatever it's called. Like a little...
Like a needle-ish thing?
Yeah, it was super long. And it was just dug into my thigh.
Oh.
And my companion had just recently gotten knee surgery, so his knee was inflating.
Oh.
And all he could do is sit there hanging on a tree hearing this Kekchi yelling. And we thought he was going to come look for us, but we weren't really sure what to do at that point because we were in the dark, we were in a mountain, we had no idea. And just to make it a little more interesting, a little more better, my companion decides to lose the cell phone.
Are you serious?
He loses the cell phone and he throws it, trying to get the flashlight. And so I tell him.
He threw it.
Yes, he threw it. I was like, dude, give me the cell phone. I need to call someone. We need to get out of here. And he's like, bro, I have some bad news. And I was like, no. And he's like, yeah, I accidentally dropped it when I slipped. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Well, okay, I get it if you drop it while you like slip, like it actually like falls out of your hands.
But, I don't know.
But sure. I thought you were just saying that he like chucked it.
I thought so. I thought he just chucked it, but I don't know.
I mean, I get it if he's trying to chuck it at the machete guy, but still, that wouldn't help.
No, he was long gone. And so what happens is that we start coming down this mountain, and we figure out that we're at a river. We're at a river, and again, it's super dark. It's raining. We weren't sure where to go.
But you guys had a flashlight.
So here's the thing. So I had my backpack, and since I realized that we didn't have the phone had a flashlight.
Yeah.
Right into my head, I got the idea to check my backpack, and I had a flashlight. But Here's the thing. Weeks before, that flashlight had ran out of batteries.
Ooh.
So I grab it, I take it out of my backpack, and I start to test it. I start to, like, take the batteries out, roll it and everything.
Yeah.
And I test it, and it's just flickering. It's just flickering, and it's not working. And literally, at this point, we're in the middle of a mountain to where you can't see anything. You can't see anything unless you had a flashlight. The only thing that was lighting our way was the moon, and there was clouds. So it was super tough and super hard. Remembering my comp's knee was swelling up because he had just recently had surgery. I had something stuck in my thigh, and we were just both super shocked, super scared. Like so there's a river, and we want to go up or we want to go down. And so my comp said, let's not go up because this guy could probably go around and just meet us there.
Yeah.
So let's go down. And so we decided to go down. We start walking, and as we were progressing, there was like parts where I had to get down first, and then I had to help my comp get down.
Yeah.
And we had to do it like that progressively because of his knee.
Yeah.
And so we get to a point where he starts to check his knee, and it's super bad. It's just super big. And at that moment, I'm checking the light, the flashlight. And so the flashlight wasn't working, it was flickering, it was just being awful, and we were just kind of at the point where we couldn't do anything else. We couldn't move without that flashlight.
Dang.
And so we did what we've learned to do, is just pray, right? We got on our knees. Well, my comp didn't have a knee, right?
One knee.
One knee. And we said the most humbling prayer I think I've ever heard in my life. The only thing we said was, please bless us. We need this flashlight at the moment, and let it be your will. I mean, we got a little exaggerated. We if we die here, I mean, it's your will and whatever, it's fine. But if we have something else to do on the mission, then let us live and help us with this flashlight and get us home safely.
Yeah.
So we finished the prayer and nothing happened.
Shoot. God's like, you should have listened to me first.
Right?
The first time.
Nothing happened, and so we were just like, crap. We sat there for about 5-10 minutes.
Did you contemplate your life?
I did.
Did your life flash before your eyes?
It didn't flash, but I did contemplate. I was like, I'm either sleeping here and going to die because of coldness, because it was super cold.
Ooh.
Or like, we're just going to be lost here. Or we're going to have to wait till the daytime. Whatever. Like, things did come into my mind. But I didn't want to say anything because my comp was kind of a scaredy cat. So we chilled for a little bit, and then we got to the point where we said another prayer.
Yeah.
And again, we asked humbly, like, if you love us, but like, please help us.
Yeah.
Like, it was such a desperate and such a humble prayer where we were like, please help us. We have no idea what to do, and we know that you are perfect, and you know what to do. You can lead us. And at that moment, I had the impression to grab the light again and check it one more time. So I grab it and I clicked it and it was flickering exactly the same. And as I'm about to put it back in my backpack, the light turned on as if it had brand new batteries.
Oh my goodness.
As if it had brand new Duracell batteries, and it just turned on, and it was like if it was just brand new, a brand new flashlight.
Duracell. Batteries from the States. That's fancy.
Yeah. And so we were just so shocked and so grateful and so humbled. And we said another prayer in gratitude.
Yeah.
And this flashlight went from having zero battery, from flickering to absolutely no problem. And so we knew that the Lord was with us. We knew that he was helping us and he was guiding us, and we weren't there alone. And so that kind of gave us more motivation to keep going.
Yeah.
Right. So we kept going down this mountain. And to make it shorter.
I can just imagine once you turn the flashlight on and you just see the guy with the machete, I wouldn't even know what to do.
That would have been so awful.
That would have been horrible.
I would have crapped myself. No, but to make it a little shorter, not skipping any details, but we were going down the mountain and it got harder and harder and harder. His knee got bigger and bigger and bigger. My legs got number and number and number.
And you didn't take the stick out?
I know I didn't take it out because it was so thin. It was so small.
Oh, you couldn't see it. Oh.
Yeah, I didn't get it taken out until later.
Oh, okay.
Until later. So
I was thinking like a war sphere.
No.
the Mayans.
And so we're going and we get to a point where we literally can't get down. We can't get down without a rope. And we're just sitting there, and again, we're like, God, help us.
Because it's like a real mountain.
It's a literal mountain.
I always so when you told me half of the story, because you said a lot that I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I was thinking it's if you go to girls camp, or if you go to like scouts camp, it's just like one trail. Like it's a trail.
Right.
Of a mountain.
No,
you know, and it's so easy to come down and go up. I didn't know if it was an actual mountain.
It's like, have you guys ever watched Hunger Games?
Yeah.
When she falls off, or
off
the mountain or something like that. It's like that. It's literally, there was no trails or anything. The only trail that we had was that river. And then that river eventually disappeared, right? Because of we were following the trail. And so I got to a point where I came into a cliff. It was a cliff and we couldn't get down without a rope. And I told my comp, bro, you're going to have to I don't know, we're going to sleep here. We got to make a fire because you can't jump this.
Yeah.
I was able to, I could, but it wasn't to the point where I could kind of catch him if he jumped on me.
Yeah.
And so we were just kind of just chilling there and we said that prayer and we were just waiting. And in the distance, we saw a ball of light. I'm serious. It was a literal ball of light just floating in the air.
Yeah.
Just floating. And we were so confused. We were just hey, we're missionaries, we're elders, please help us. We're stuck, someone tried to kill us. We just tried to exaggerate the story as much as possible. This guy, literally, he came at us. Well, it wasn't exaggerating, right? Because it was the truth, but we were just yelling at an exaggeration where it was awful. And we're like, Laz! Laz!
Yeah.
And all we could see is this floating ball of light disappear into the distance.
Disappear?
It disappeared.
You guys weren't even scared if it was, the machete guy?
No, we weren't
scared. At that point, you were kind of just anybody, come and help us.
Oh, yeah, anybody, literally. And it was a ball, and we were and we didn't really realize until the ball had left, or the little floating thingy.
Yeah.
And we were like, dude, what was that? And we were like, I don't know, man. I don't know what that was, but I hope, it comes back or something.
Yeah.
We were just hopeful the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
We did lose a little bit of hope, to be honest.
I bet.
It was we might have to sleep here. We started thinking,
realistically.
Realistically.
How would you survive a night out in the mountain?
Exactly. How would we do this? Your knee's getting bad. Am I going to have to get, sticks and stuff? I don't know, surgically remove your knee? But, yeah, this ball disappears. And in a matter of time, we see a group of Kekchis, a group of those indigenous people, walk by.
Oh.
And they're just talking and they're walking by and we start yelling. We're like, hey.
So you're yelling in Kekchi.
What? Yeah, or we're elders.
Yeah,
you know, the normal. And we're yelling and these people, they actually hear us. They notice us. And they're like, what are you guys doing over there?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, we were just like, we're missionaries. We got attacked and there was a guy over here. He tried to hurt us. We need to get down. And so these guys, luckily, weirdly, I don't believe in coincidences, but they had a rope.
No way.
I don't want it to sound like this guy's making this up, you know? No, but this is a super,
this is
true. It's how it happened. And it was weird because it was really miracles. I actually saw miracles in this situation, in this experience. They had a rope and they brought us down. They took us down and we told them thanks for helping us and everything. I had to kind of carry my companion and they're like, okay, everything good? And we're like, yeah. This guy just kind of went ham on us, just kind of crazy. But everything's good. And they're like, okay, just be careful because they're killing people here. And they
are
just
you serious?
Yeah, and they just kidnapped the girl. So that's why we're out here. We're with a rope because we know it's a mountain section and we're trying to find her.
They're trying to find her. What if it was the... What if it was the girl?
Exactly, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
And so we're like, we're trying to find her. That's why we have the rope. And we're like, it didn't really hit us. I didn't think about it. We're like, okay, thanks.
Because at that point, you're just like, okay, like, civilization.
I just want to go home. And so we're like, okay. And then we realized where we are. We were at a place called Rashoha, which was about 30 to 40 minutes away from our house walking. So that was a struggle. He was struggling. My companion was struggling. When we get to a house, well, we get to a member's house to tell them what happened to us.
Yeah.
They weren't there.
Oh.
And then we went to another member's house and they weren't there. I don't know why, but no one was home that night. So what we did was we started walking home, and luckily there was this one guy that we had contacted and knew who worked at an internet where we would write our families every Monday. Mm-hmm. And he took us to the hospital, the Centro de Salud.
Yeah.
And there I realized that I had that little thorn in my thigh. Oh. It was like the size of a pencil. And
shoot. Oh, because you only had the pain. You never really, stopped to check it.
I had the pain. And so there they injected us for the pain and stuff. And then we went home and we were in shock. Literally, we were in shock because of what happened. And then and there we had realized what the guy had said over there about the lady.
Yeah.
The little girl missing.
Yeah.
And we're like, shoot. And I mean, that's just kind of how it happened. We the next day, the missionaries, the zone leaders came and looked for us and everything. And,
yeah.
And that was, I was there for about 2 more weeks and then I had left.
That's so crazy. That was a lot more than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's crazy. And to think, like, that could have been the girl that they were talking about. Like,
we never figured it out if it was. Which is kind of, it like haunts me. Because we didn't, to a point, I didn't go back.
Yeah.
I knew it was dangerous. They took us out. The mission president called us and he's like, don't you guys ever go back up to that mountain. Don't you guys do anything. You guys are having changes.
Yeah.
Just stick out these 2 weeks, which are the end of the changes. And you guys are going to be kicked out or like taken out.
Taken out, yeah.
And so I never heard about this girl ever again. I didn't know if she had been kidnapped or anything. But it's something that happens a lot in Guatemala. Like, there's a lot of kidnappings. They lynch people. They'll put people on fire. And it happens a lot over there. Like, it's their traditions, right, to take care of the criminals or things like that. But I mean, yeah, it's kind of scary. It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's not common in our lifestyles.
That's insane. Oh my gosh. I'm like getting goosebumps. My That's horrible. Yeah. Okay. I don't know how to continue on, but we'll make a little pause and we'll come back after these messages. What's going on, guys? This is Rachel. If you guys want another podcast suggestion, I highly suggest that you guys go and follow my brother, Tony. His podcast name is The Tony Acosta Show, and he talks about everything and anything. He does football, he does motivation, he does life. So I'm sure any episode that you will hear from him is going to improve your life, and I know it. So go ahead. His stuff is going to be in the description box below. Go check him out. Go subscribe. And I'll see you guys on the next episode. Love you guys. Bye. Okay, and we are back. So this second experience, I heard a little bit about it, but not too much in detail, kind of like this last one. I thought I knew more about the last one, but I didn't. So this next one should be on the Halloween episode, but this is Eric's episode, so...
I have a lot more experiences for a Halloween episode.
Okay, yeah. We'll get to those. So you're saying woman, she's going to get converted, fell back into drinking. Continue with the story.
Yeah, so we were teaching a sister who was having troubles with drinking. She had a lot of troubles with drinking, and she had a lot of troubles with her ex-boyfriend and stuff. And so we would constantly go to her house, see how she was doing, kind of help her not drink anymore. She was actually progressing. She was going to church. She wasn't drinking. But, I mean, sometimes Satan gets the best of us, right?
And
this one night, it was like 9:30, 9:45-ish. And by that time, we already have to be home as missionaries. And so we get a call from her. Well, it wasn't her daughter, but she did stay with them, with her. She was kind of like a daughter.
Like a daughter? Right? Oh, okay.
I would consider her a daughter. And so she calls us. She's like, hey, something's not right. You guys have to come over now or else something horrible is going to happen. And so I asked her for details, but she said, no, I'm not going to tell you anything. You guys just have to come over. There's something wrong with my mom. And you guys have to be over here now, please.
Yeah.
And I mean, we went over.
Well, at that point, did you guys get that same feeling where it's like, no, we shouldn't? Or was it like, kind of just like, oh my gosh, we need to help her. Help her daughter and just be like, you know, do it for the daughter instead of like,
right,
you know.
No, at that point, we didn't feel like we felt like we were supposed to be there for the daughter.
Okay.
Like, that it was okay and that. We were just kind of curious about what was going on.
Yeah.
And we didn't feel like a stop or like, hey, don't go. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
But go because you have the priesthood and they didn't have it in their house.
Yeah.
So we went. I had a different companion from my other story. So this companion was a little more helpful. He had more experience on the mission. He was almost gonna finish.
And so, where were you on your mission?
I was at about like 16 months. So we 16. Both had,
oh, okay.
we
pretty
both
good
had
time.
Experience. We both had experience. And so we go, we walk to this house, which was pretty far away, and we get there and the door is open, lights are on, door is open, we call for the daughter.
Red sign, number one.
Red sign, definitely.
Yeah, red sign, number
it's
one.
It's a huge red sign. We didn't knock, but we called for the daughter, and she wasn't there, she wouldn't answer. And so we walk in, it was upstairs.
Yeah,
stairs.
That seems scary.
A small little corridor.
That's
very
even
bad
scary.
Lighting. Very bad lighting. And so we're walking up. I was in front of my companion, which always kind of tend to happen.
Why?
Weird, I don't know. And so we're walking up, and as we get to the living room, we see this hermana, sitting on the floor with a beer bottle in her hand.
And like movie style.
Like movie style. Like it was pretty bad, and she looked like she was like unconscious or something. So we go up to her, and she's looking down, straight down at the floor. And my companion starts looking in the rooms for the daughter.
Yeah.
But she's nowhere to be found. And so I try to start a conversation with the sister. And I grab her arm and I say, hey, what's going on? Are you okay?
Yeah.
And at that moment, my companion tries to take the bottle away from her. And she looks me straight in the eyes. And I promise that she was not the person we were teaching. She was someone completely different. And at that moment in my entire life, in the first moment, I honestly thought that I saw, like, I don't want to say the devil, but I want to say, like, a bad spirit.
Bad, yeah.
A bad spirit look at me in the face and, like, kind of taunting me at the point where it was like, you think...
It's like, what can you do?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what can you do in this situation? Like,
yeah.
I have control over her and you don't. And that's the impression I got.
Oh my.
That's the impression I got as a missionary, right? As someone set apart, as a disciple of Christ, that's just kind of what I felt.
Yeah.
Like, she was laughing at me, but it wasn't her.
She was laughing.
It wasn't her. Like, that's what I
oh,
perceived.
Yeah, yeah,
at this
yeah.
moment,
okay.
She wasn't laughing yet, but...
But that was kind of like a in-your-face kind of like,
exactly.
What are you going to do, like...
And,
you have no power.
Uh-huh. And so I start asking her questions, and she just wouldn't answer. She was just staring at me.
Yeah.
Face down, but the look is up. And so I start asking her, hey, how's it going? Hey, where's your daughter? What's going on?
Yeah.
Is there anything we can do? And all she does is stare. And my companion again tries to grab the bottle, but she just looks over at him and just snatches it out. Super pissed. Don't touch my bottle.
No way.
Don't touch my bottle. And she kept saying that. Don't touch my bottle. And it was like, okay, relax. It's fine.
Yeah.
Relax. We're here to help. Don't worry. And at that moment, she starts to kind of giggle. Just like a weird, evil, sinister giggle. And at that point, I knew. It was like, okay, like we can't be here alone. Like,
yeah.
This is pretty serious. And so we try to call some older people from the church, right?
Yeah.
And no one would pick up. No one would answer. And so me and my companion look at each other like, what do we do? Like, all we can do is just kind of be here and just like
make sure she doesn't hurt herself,
right? Exactly. And details that I forgot to say, I mean, she was drinking and she wanted to commit suicide in the past, and that's something that she would share with us, but it wasn't like a huge thing that she'd be like, I want to commit. She would just tell us that she had thoughts. And which is why part of the reason why we would go over. So she had these thoughts, and we knew that was present, and so that's the reason why we didn't want to leave her.
Yeah, of course.
Because we didn't want her to hurt herself. So at that moment, my companion, he just stays quiet, right? He just looks like he's gaining some inspiration. Yeah. I was a little confused. I was like, oh my gosh, like, what do we do?
Yeah.
So I look at my comp and he just looks super serious at the point where it's like, this guy is going to come out with something super inspirational right now, yo.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to come out with some power. He's going to turn super sane and he's going to cast this demon out of this lady.
Yeah.
And at the moment, at that moment, he just started to testify of the Lord's power, of Jesus Christ's power. And it wasn't like, hey, you're in the wrong, or why are you doing this? You have to repent.
Yeah, like, it wasn't like blaming her.
Exactly. He wasn't like throwing trash at her or shame or anything. But he just started to talk about Christ.
Yeah.
He just started talking about Christ. And at that moment, you saw a change in her face. A change in her face where it was like if she really came back. Like if a piece of her, like if a piece of her came back. And it was like she started to realize who we were.
Yeah.
And my companion was just going off like, hey, like Christ and his atonement is just super important. And it's so personal and it's for you. And we know make mistakes. We know that you're not perfect. And we know you know that. But I mean, we're here for a reason.
Preach,
coincidence.
Boy.
Coincidences don't exist, right? And I was like, that's my comp.
Yeah.
If I could have, I would have given him a high five, but I didn't feel like it was appropriate. I gave it to him after, but
in my head, I just like, I feel like there should be like a choir coming out in the background. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so my comp's going off at that, and I was just really focused on her, seeing how she was.
And seeing the change in her.
Change in her, yeah. Everything, you can tell the honesty or the change in someone through their eyes.
Ooh.
And so I saw that through her eyes, that she started to realize who we were.
Yeah.
And so she let go of the bottle, and I grabbed it, and I took it, and I put it in the
trash?
Kitchen.
Oh, kitchen.
I hid all the knives, just in case.
Oh, good.
I hid all the knives. And I came back, and my companion was just there and was holding her hand, and just kind of just still talking, right? And so at that moment, I got on my knees as well. We were both on our knees because she was still sitting.
Yeah.
And she grabs both of our hands, right?
Yeah.
She grabbed my right hand and my companion's right hand. He was on the left, I was on the right. And he was talking, and she was just crying, bawling at this point.
Oh, wow.
Just like, hey, like, I need help, bawling. And then whatever was in her came back. At that point.
No way!
Came back, and it was slowly though, because she was holding her hands, and then she put her head down, and then she slowly started to tighten our hands.
Oh my.
Just tight, so tight, like I got numb. Like my arm got numb.
And it's a woman.
It was a woman. It was like a strength that I honestly had never felt. Like I would play with my uncles, that whole tight grip hand thing where it was like, mercy. But this was a hold that was like, oh my gosh, not even the sweat on my hands could slip me out of this out of this hold. And we knew that was like, oh my goodness, like either she is super buff, she does some CrossFit or something, I don't know, or she is just, something's wrong.
It's not her.
And so at that moment, she looks up again, and that same look that I saw at the beginning
comes back. Oh my.
Came back, and she started to just like, it was like a sinister smile. Where it was again like, who do you think you are? Do you think you have the power to do this and to cast me out?
I think it was like a taunt where it's
exactly.
It's like, okay, you guys can think you guys have some power, but like, watch me come out again,
watch this.
You know?
Exactly. And so at that point, it got a little serious to where she was just, it was coming from crying to kind of laughing to smiling. It was just weird.
Yeah.
And
all over the place.
All we could do was just kind of wait it out, and we offered a prayer, and so even though she wasn't really paying attention, my comp starts praying. This was one of my best comps. Learned so much from him.
What's his name?
Was super spiritual, Elder Vargas, from California. Really good guy. And so she's holding us tight, and he starts to pray, and this is how I learned that prayer is actually super strong.
Yeah.
Because throughout the prayer, her grip started to slowly fade away. Mm-hmm. Started to fade away. And she just started crying, and she kind of lost all of her energy. Like all of her energy.
Yeah.
And everything was just lost, and she just kind of wanted to lay down. But I mean, I was there, and I just kind of held her to the point where I could. And she just started to cry.
Aww.
And so we just told her that she was a daughter of God, and and that we were there to help her. We were there as messengers, and we wanted to help her in any way possible. She started to ask us where her daughter was, what had happened. She wasn't really conscious. She didn't know what was going on. All she could remember was just started to drink a little bit, and then she just blacked out from there.
Yeah.
And so she was conscious from this point on, but just kind of that repentance from her eyes, kind of like that regret.
Yeah.
From falling back was just kind of really awful, to the point where it was like, wow, like these things that we commit, like it hurts us so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And she was hurting really bad at that point, and she was just super regretful for what she had done, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, we were there to help her and tell her that the Lord was always there for her. And so after a while, we just kind of waited. We called again the members we had called, and they came, and we went home. After that, unfortunately, we didn't really hear about her because we were forbidden to go back to the house.
Oh, really?
Because it kind of counts as something like super serious in a spiritual sense, right?
Yeah.
So in those cases, leaders of the church take over, and they kind of go in and they kind of help and they kind of do prayers and stuff like that. So we weren't able to go and preach there anymore. We did see the daughter once, and she had told us that things had gone better, that she was going to church, and that she wasn't drinking anymore. But it was a super crazy, like, awesome experience, to the point I can say awesome, because I could honestly see that the power of Christ and what he does and what he kind of helps his children realize is that they're not perfect.
Yeah.
And no matter if a person is, we could say in this situation, possessed in some way,
mm-hmm.
that has no power over the atonement of Christ.
Yeah.
At all. We were representatives of Jesus Christ. We were set apart with that authority to tell that whatever was in her to leave.
Yeah.
In the most simplest and humblest way, as in offering a prayer.
Yeah.
So I could say that I saw adversity in the eye, literally, but just staying true to who I was as a missionary and just preaching in the most simplest way.
Yeah.
It helped her and saved her life.
That's crazy. And I think it's like going back to the basic, because like I feel like in situations like that, you're like, something huge has to happen, like all of this and that, like to like make her come back to like consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like the plain and simple things where it's like prayer and preaching, you know. And it's like so crazy how like someone can be like such in a bad state, and then you like clash with someone that's like in a good state, and it's kind of like, what's gonna happen? Because you don't know, especially at that state that she was in.
Right.
You're kind of like, okay, I can try this, but what if it doesn't work?
Exactly.
You know, and then that's where you have to have faith in your compass. Just like, this is, like, I know this is going to work, right. You know?
And yeah.
Like, his faith, I bet, was, like, super strong.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. And that's why we weren't able to go back.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what you were saying with the negative and the positive, as in we had the Spirit of Christ, right? We had the Spirit with us, and we had all that. But a lot of times we're humans, too. As missionaries, people see us as angels, and we are to a point because we're preaching, right?
Yeah.
But we're humans too. We're teenagers or we're young adults where we're vulnerable.
Yeah.
And with that authority and that power that we have to be set apart and to be preachers and to be disciples of Christ and do what he did, like the adversary knows that. He knows what we're doing. So in some sense, like, it's a protection towards us, so nothing happens to us.
Yeah.
Like if a missionary isn't spiritually at a place where he should or has to be to kind of help that person that's mm-hmm. in such a bad state, then like it is possible where the missionary can kind of get affected by that,
of course,
and not just spiritually but mentally and emotionally, and it's really hard. So I was super grateful to have a super spiritual comp, one that had experience. Our testimonies were super strong at that point. We were baptizing, we were preaching, we were just on a roll as missionaries. So we were sent and we were there because we were supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's why we're always supposed to be firm on our faith, on our testimony, know who we are, and always just kind of lean on that. Just kind of have faith and that confidence that we are God's children. And if we are, what's the word? If we are...
Firm?
Firm? No, if we are worthy of it, then the Lord will always have our back, right? We'll always have that power to tell adversary to go away.
Yeah. That's a crazy story. I didn't know like the depths of that story.
Yeah,
but that's insane. I think it's so cool how you have to be firm, you know. And how you were saying, like, people can just fall back and be like, oh, I had such a traumatic experience on my mission. And, you know, that can just, like, start to decrease because, you know, they can be like, she was doing so good, but then this happened, you know. And that could just, like, diminish, you know, your faithfulness or your testimony. But at the point where you guys were at is, like, really cool to see how the Lord is working and how you guys were the ones that had to be there with her.
Definitely.
Which was really, really cool to see. And that you guys were missionaries that were able to take that responsibility at the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, missionaries, they learn. If they let themselves learn, right?
Yeah.
They learn that Jesus Christ is the Christ, that he came and he paid for everyone's sins, literally everyone's sins.
Yeah.
Right? Not just their sins, but also their tears, their problems, their everything, literally. And so I know that Christ lives and that he came here to pay for all that.
Yeah.
And that if we are ever in a bad state or if we ever do something wrong, the atonement is there for us to get back up.
Yeah.
Right? It's not about how many times we fall, right? Although we should not have a huge amount of times falling.
Yeah.
Right? We should kind of keep it... control that.
Stay up. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's about how you rise and how you go from that point on.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're not perfect. But I know that the gospel, and I know that missionary work really truly helps people understand who they are. That they're mm-hmm. literally children of God, and that Christ is also a child of God, and he mm-hmm. is our brother. And he came here for us.
Yeah.
He came here to help us, and his main objective is to help us get back to the presence of our Heavenly Father and to live eternally with our families.
Yeah.
And that's what a missionary learns at the end of their mission if they let themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And these experiences, they all came because they had to, and it molded my testimony and my faith on how I should actually really live.
Yeah.
Be worthy and be able to be in the position where God needs me to be at any time and any given moment.
Yeah.
And to be that instrument in his hands.
Yeah, amen. To help whoever
exactly
needs to be helped at the moment. Awesome. All right, to finish up this journal entry, let's talk about your homecoming. Mm. Okay, so you came home July 19th,
yes.
2018.
Mm-hmm.
What were your feelings on the plane? Like, were you thinking, were you nervous? Were you excited? Or, like, were you like, how am I going to react? How are they going to react? What was going through your mind?
Coming home is it's a lot different than leaving home.
I bet.
And my feelings on the plane were excitement, a little bit of nervousness. I did want to throw up a couple times because I was super excited to see family, right? A little bit of sadness due to the fact that I was leaving, but more than anything, like, what I had in my heart was hope.
Yeah.
Hope that what I had learned on the mission and the experiences that I had gone through and that the Lord really put me through, I was just hopeful that they actually touched my heart and that I could actually make a difference here at home. So I was coming home and I was just like, I hope and I pray that I can make a difference back at home, knowing that I made a difference in Guatemala. And I knew that, I mean, those 2 years, they had helped me become a better person and be more like Christ. But I know as well, and I knew as well, that life back at home, I mean, the world is a dark place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So being that light that you're supposed to be and that you're called to be, like, I was just set on the fact that I was going to do things that we're going to just make that light brighter and help other people and just kind of keep people's lives more positive, more helpful, and just keep serving.
Yeah. Right?
Even though I didn't have the tag anymore.
Yeah, of course. You have a paperclip now.
Exactly.
AKA, the Paperclip Club was founded by my tío, Victor, my uncle. And so he has a paperclip on his little pocket in his jacket. So every time he goes to church, it's kind of like his plaque. It's where he wears it. The paperclip, so...
It's a huge symbol for the family.
Yeah, it's a, like, family tradition. So Eric was handed down a paperclip.
I was, just barely. I've been home about 2 weeks, so he gave it to me, like, 2 days ago.
And congratulations,
Thank
man.
You. Thanks.
Okay. So being home, what has been your favorite thing coming home?
My favorite thing, before the mission, I was a huge movie guy. Last night, I just barely watched my first movie, and I thought that was going to be one of the first things that I was going to do and be more excited about. Well, not like I thought. Like, I thought I was going to jump into movies and stuff like that, but it was weird because I wasn't scared at the fact that I was going to go out and, like, hang out, but I just kind of wanted to put that on hold because as missionaries, we don't have phones, we don't have social media, we don't have anything like that. So we disconnect from the social media world, and we actually connect to the world.
Yeah.
And it opened my eyes to see that life is actually really beautiful, and we can make it beautiful if we actually let it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was super excited to come home and be with my family, really kind of just hug them, see them, live moments with them again, because it is something that I really actually missed. I also miss dancing, which I'm doing now. But it goes to show that the most important things and the things you miss most are the things that touch your heart, which are like family, right? Which are family and actually the gospel, living it here at home and going to church and meeting new people and things like that. I thought that it would affect me more as in social media and movies and stuff, but yeah. I come to learn that that doesn't really matter. It hasn't really impacted me in a way where it's like, I gotta go to the movies.
Yeah.
Or I gotta go and on a date or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I've just been really taking it slow and I've been just hanging out with the family, which is awesome. I got to meet my new
nephew
that my brother and Leslie had when I was out there on the mission, and I came home and met him. Little bugger hates me still, can't stand me.
Oh, no, he hates me
but,
too.
But he's awesome, and that's what I was most excited about, to be honest.
That's way cool. Yeah, and over here, we were really excited too. To be honest, I didn't know what to feel. You know, I was like, oh, he's coming home. But he's coming home. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I had gotten really used to, like, being by myself.
Right.
You know, and so it's like, I'm really happy that now I have you to, like, keep me company. And, you know, it's kind of like the transition. I'm still, like, getting used to having someone.
Right.
And, like, to do something with me, you know.
Definitely.
To, like, go out or, you know, to, like, go to the store even or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we were really happy. I was asking Dad. I was like, no, every day Dad would ask me, ¿Y cómo te sientes? How do you feel? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I tell him, I have no idea. I don't know what to feel.
Right.
And he'd tell me every day. And then I'd ask Mom, and she's like, yeah, he needs to be home already. You know,
sure,
right. Mom would just want you home.
Definitely.
You know, but it's really great to have you back and to see how much you have progressed in all those experiences, how you want to, like, implement them, you know, into the family and into your family, into life, you know. And I think that's awesome. And you should always, like, keep that in mind and don't ever forget it, you know.
Definitely.
Which is
exactly.
Awesome.
No, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's not easy to be home, right?
Yeah, I bet.
Because as a missionary, you're in a bubble, in a very, very tight, small bubble, where it's like there's a lot of helpful rules. They're not rules, but they're just things to keep
guidelines.
Us safe. Guidelines, exactly.
Yeah.
And you're literally, it's hot and cold, so you're literally thrown from the mission life into just real life, and there's no, like, transition or, like,
yeah,
you know, you make the best out of it and you try to transition into it, but it's really just the complete opposite. So
yeah,
something that my brother told me was that it gets hard. I mean, my brother is a return missionary as well. He's an RM and he served in Honduras, and he has a lot of experience with that, and one of the first things he told me was God puts you in an environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He takes you out of a bad environment, which is the world.
Yeah.
Puts you into a good environment, which is the mission, which is a little piece of heaven. Helps you in there. He helps you grow and progress and teaches you things.
Yeah.
And then he grabs you and he puts you back into that crappy environment.
Mm-hmm.
As in, which is the world, right? The dark and the stormy world that we live
in,
right? Which doesn't have to be that way, aka it's bright and it's awesome. But that's what a lot of people portray it to be. And so he takes you out of a good environment and puts you back into the normal life. And you actually start to question yourself, like, wow, this is crazy. This is different. Like, this is,
yeah.
You see the difference from hot and from cold. And that's really where God tests you and says,
mm-hmm.
like, did you learn anything?
Yeah.
Because if you did, you got to apply it now. Because if not, you're just going to go back to the same old things.
Yeah.
So you come back, and that's when the mission actually starts for the rest of your life. You actually have to apply the things that you learned on your mission. And it's so easy to forget. So
yeah.
Easy to go back and be like, well, there are 2 years that I lived and it was awesome and
mm-hmm.
cool, but I mean, I'm moving on. But the principles that you learn, if you apply them throughout your life, you'll honestly be successful.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of like high school and, well, for me, because I haven't gone to college yet. But it's kind of like high school, you have all of your school, and then you look forward to summer, which is like, you don't feel bad for being lazy because you know that next year you'll be productive. Definitely. And have something to do.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like your senior year, you're so productive and you do like, you're still in school, so you have something to do.
Yeah.
The moment you get out, and if you're not going to college, it's kind of like, okay, what do I do now?
It's crazy.
You know, it's kind of like, okay, I have to go get a job. I have to do this. I have to do that. And it's, you know, it's a scary time.
It really is.
But I think that, you know, that analogy with the high school and stuff, I don't think is as much as, like, the mission and coming home.
Right.
Like, that's a bigger...
Change is scary, you know? Change is really scary, but it also helps us progress.
Yeah.
And that's why we're here. We're supposed to progress and be better than what we were the day before.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you live that going from high school to college, then that's the way you have to learn.
Yeah.
If you live it from going to the mission home, that's the way you gotta learn, you know?
Yeah.
But it's all about just being a better you every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And taking all the opportunities that God gives you and actually learning from them. The good and especially the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the bad. Because that's where one learns the most.
Yeah, for sure. And so, to finish up, what's next for Eric Acosta?
What's next for me?
What's next?
Well, I did start a company brand. Not a company, a brand.
A brand.
A brand. And social, it's about presence. Fitness. On the mission, I learned how important the body is and how it's a temple and how we should treat it that way. So I got really into fitness my last couple of months. And so I started right when I got home. It's called Risen Elite Fitness.
They will be down in the post. You have to go and follow them on every social platform. Snapchat, Instagram. You don't have a Facebook yet.
Not yet, but I will.
He will. So be on the lookout for that.
On the tube later.
YouTube, yes. So yeah, just follow Risen Elite Fitness.
Risen Elite Fitness.
On all social platforms. And I will link those in the description.
Yeah, so I think that's the next step for me. That's what I want to do. I want to keep going to the gym. Keep a healthy lifestyle. And yeah, I mean, I'd love for you guys to follow. And everything that I post has to do with health.
Yeah.
Health, fitness, the way we should be eating, stuff like that, motivation.
Mental health,
and all that. I mean, it all comes together. Spiritual health, emotional health, physical health, and what was that last one?
Mental health.
It all comes together. And that's what Risen Elite Fitness is about, just to have a better lifestyle. And I don't want to do it alone. I want to involve as many people as possible. So that's what I'm kind of keeping myself with. And I'm also doing real estate school, thanks to my brother. He's a broker. And so I'm keeping myself busy with those two things, including dance as well, but I'm staying super busy with those two things.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So this Risen Elite is going to be big, so hop on.
Risen.
Hashtag Risen. And already he's been able to help a bunch of people who have like reached out to him and who follow his stuff, and they've just reached out to him and thanked him for, you know, everything that he's done. And he just like posts simple things, you know, simple quotes, simple things to do during the day, and that's really improved the lives of already a lot of people. So if you want to improve your life, go to Risen Elite Fitness.
Rise.
If you want to rise.
Rise.
And if you want to be a Risen-y. Just kidding. Yeah, so follow them. And yeah, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, sis.
On my voice diary. And we will see you guys next time. Anything you want
to
say?
I would love to say something. Keep following and keep listening to Rad Ray, to the...
For the Record.
For the Record show. Rachel, she has a huge potential. She has a really awesome way of getting to people and actually making them feel special and important the way they really should feel, you know? So all of her product, all of her content is something that comes from the heart. I've never seen someone work so humbly and so purely in the fact that, like, her objective is just honestly to make a better place. So keep listening and keep following all her product, all her blogs, vlogs. She also has a photography Instagram account and all that, because all she does is so pure and so simple and so awesome. And I think it's just awesome beauty. So keep following her, and that would be awesome.
Thank you. From the heart.
Anytime.
Yeah. So, yes, thank you guys again for watching. For listening, and we will hear you guys on the next show.
Woo!
Bye, love you guys.